This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, Damien Carrick here. Welcome to the Law Report. A warning though, we are discussing graphic and confronting procedures.
Brenda, what can you tell us about the charge?
Today, the extraordinary case of Brendan Lee Russell.
A tattoo artist from the Central Coast has been charged with manslaughter. A young mother died from blood poisoning 3 weeks after he performed a body modification procedure on her.
The 37-year-old was also hit with a charge of grievous bodily harm after allegedly performing a tummy tuck on another customer.
It is the first decision we have on this very particular issue of consent to injury or actual bodily harm when it comes to these body modification procedures.
Last week, a New South Wales judge found Terrigal man Brendan Lee Russell guilty of 3 charges: female genital mutilation, intentionally causing grievous bodily harm, and manslaughter. ABC court reporter Jamie McKinnell followed the trial. Jamie, the accused is a self-declared extreme body modifier. For those unfamiliar with the term, what exactly is a body modifier and where did Brendan Russell work?
The closest thing that people will probably be familiar with is just having a piercing done. So when you go into a piercing or tattoo studio, obviously you can get piercings or tattoos done. But body modification is a step beyond that. And it's a level of extremity, I guess we can say, where people want to make alterations to their body, obviously consensually, but they do things like splitting their tongues or having what they call scarification, which is basically where someone etches patterns into your skin. And so there's a lot of different ranges. There's a whole scale of different modifications that people have done for various reasons. And Brendan Lee Russell is a person who worked in a tattoo and body modification studio at Erin Affair Shopping Centre in New South Wales.
Brendan Russell, I understand, was known as B Slice. That was his nickname. And one journalist covering the trial described him as the leader of a confronting body modification community whose members have their tongues split, their eyeballs tattooed, and their skin scarred in intricate patterns. So this is a sort of a subculture, if you like.
Yeah, it's fair to describe it that way. Brendan Russell was a person who heavily marketed his services on social media. And when he was first arrested, there were a lot of different pictures taken and published from his various social media accounts, like on his Instagram in particular, where people would look at these photos and think it is pretty extreme. And it's certainly not for the squeamish to look at these photos, because the people who had services done were undergoing pretty extreme procedures. And Brendan Russell sort of styled himself as a leader. He was somebody who was painted during the course of this trial as somebody who was incredibly confident in his own ability, despite holding no medical qualifications.
Let's walk through the 3 charges, which involved 3 different clients. The first charge involved the charge of female genital mutilation. What was the procedure there, and what was the defence that he mounted to this particular charge?
Female genital mutilation is a very rare charge. We don't really see this coming up in court very much, but it has been the subject of cases in the past, and it's usually been in the context of ritualistic settings. But Brendan Russell undertook a procedure on a woman in 2015, which was a partial excise of her labia. And this was consensual. It was done with her permission, obviously, in his tattoo and body modification studio. But she was one of 3 separate women who all had bad outcomes from the procedure that she underwent. And the court heard over the course of this trial that some of the results that she has suffered is pain and ongoing problems. She told the court through different evidence that she has pain and finds it difficult to use tampons at times and still is uncomfortable sometimes when she wears underwear. So while this was a consensual procedure, it perhaps didn't result in the outcome that she was expecting or hoping for. Now, this is an interesting charge as well because of the issue of consent. The defence line of argument here was that some cosmetic surgeons actually perform this procedure on purely cosmetic grounds. And they were arguing that the law which prohibits female genital mutilation should not be interpreted literally. The argument was that it was intended to apply to children or in ritualistic settings. And the judge in the district court, Helen Syme, has disregarded that. She didn't really buy into that argument and said that, no, the act in this instance and in the context of this case is very clear. And what happened here with this procedure in particular was unlawful in terms of that act.
Presumably, when it comes to the cosmetic surgery, what is done in that context is in the medical model with counselling and with professional medical skills at play.
Yeah, exactly. And over the course of this trial, Brendan Russell's hygiene practices in particular were heavily called into question.
So we had the first charge of female genital mutilation. There was a second charge relating to a tummy tuck, which was carried out in 2016, which left the client with extreme pain and requiring corrective surgery.
And this is certainly in that category of being somewhat of a grisly procedure, because the court actually was shown a video of this happening. The woman's husband was recording on his phone while this was happening. And it was basically Brendan Russell cutting into her stomach to remove a strip of skin. She'd had children and she wasn't really happy with how her stomach looked. So when she went in, she was shown a photograph of another woman from New Zealand who had this procedure done. And there was discussion about giving her what was referred to as an McPherson tummy. So it was a procedure which was designed to, I guess, make her stomach look flatter and get rid of some excess skin. This woman paid $800 for this procedure, which was actually half the usual price which Russell normally charged. That was later refunded because of the adverse outcomes she had. And she was actually a former nursing student. He did this procedure under a local anaesthetic by injecting anaesthetic into the area he was intending to work on. And then this video that the court was shown was basically him cutting into her stomach. Now, the husband was recalling as well during the course of this trial that halfway through the procedure, Russell put his scalpel in the open wound and sort of left it sitting there. And the husband said it was sitting in her fatty tissue in her stomach. And he was not sure why Russell had done that. Now, this woman, as you said, was left in extreme pain. She said when the anaesthetic wore off when she got home, she was feeling dizzy and there was blood everywhere and it was in a pretty bad state. She ended up having to have rounds of corrective surgery and she was very apprehensive about telling anybody in terms of the medical professionals who worked on her who had done this procedure. Russell told her afterwards that he could have fixed the problems and that he said, quote, "Doctors don't know what they're on about." So again, that goes to his level of confidence in his own ability. He was very convincing and very confident, she said, before she went through this procedure, and she felt like she was in really good hands. But putting the scalpel in the open wound went to the intentionally causing grievous bodily harm charge, because when doctors went in to correct this work, they noticed there was an injury to her corrective tissue in her stomach. And so part of the argument was that the judge found that level of injury did amount to grievous bodily harm, that there was an intent there, and that consent was not a defence. And that was one of the most significant things to come out of this trial, that the consent that she gave was not relevant to a defence.
The third charge, the most serious one, manslaughter, related to the 2017 death of a young woman who'd had a silicon snowflake-shaped implant placed under the skin of her hand, and that became infected and she died, I think, of septicemia. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that was what the Crown was really seeking to prove. The cause of death was really, really pivotal in this case. This woman had this snowflake-shaped implant placed under her skin in March 2017, and then the next month, so a couple of weeks later, she returned to Russell's studio and she was complaining that it was very painful and it was possibly infected. At that point, Russell cleaned the wound and then reinserted the implant. He also placed a second implant at another point under the skin of her hand. And that was quite key because that happened 2 days before she was found dead at home. And it was at a point where this woman, according to medical experts who gave evidence, definitely needed immediate medical assistance. And so that was part of the argument about a duty of care that he owed to this client. The court also heard that this was a client who had undergone a lot of different work with Brendan Russell. She'd had at least 9 different procedures on various parts of her body done by him in the past. And so the court was told there was a level of trust there. And that is where, in part, the duty of care came, not just because there was a contractual arrangement and she was paying for services, but there was this long-standing relationship which resulted in a lot of trust. And this woman actually, the court heard, told her mother at one point that she regarded Brendan Russell as a god. And she said, "He's the only person that I would ever let do these kind of procedures on me." Judge Helen Syme found that, you know, there was a level of trust. She said the duty of care had been established. There was a significant breach of that duty of care. And she actually equated the standard of care required as being not the same as a patient to a doctor, but similar to that duty of care that a doctor owes their patient. So she's found that Brendan Russell has substantially breached his duty of care. And she also found that he actually discouraged this woman from seeking medical advice at the point when that implant was reinserted, because he was urging her not to tell anyone who did this procedure if she ended up going to see doctors. And that was a way of him, the judge found, dissuading her from seeking the medical attention she obviously needed.
Jamie McKinnell, ABC court reporter, thank you very much for speaking to the Law Report.
No worries, thanks.
Brendan Lee Russell will be back in court in March for sentencing.
You're listening to The Law Report on ABC Radio National with Damien Carrick. Available anywhere, anytime, via the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jared Bartle is a lawyer, sessional lecturer in criminal law at RMIT and a criminal justice consultant. He says the Brendan Lee Russell prosecution is the first in Australia focusing on body modification procedures gone wrong. But believe it or not, there is an even stranger case involving the removal of body parts. In July this year in Brisbane, a 28-year-old electrician, Ryan Andrew King, pleaded guilty to two backyard castrations.
So this was a very unusual case. Ryan Andrew King was a young man who was advertising online in what are known as eunuch forums, so people that wish to have their genitals removed, kind of subculture online. He was advertising on these websites for castration surgeries, not for a fee. He was just offering his services, even though he had no medical qualifications. He was a tradie. And two men approached him to undertake these procedures and had their genitals removed. And in one of those cases, there were serious medical complications as a result of that. So very unusual case, again, coming to this idea of consensual injury and how the criminal law should handle that.
There were two men who answered this advertisement on the eunuch website, 26-year-old man from New South Wales and a 66-year-old man from Victoria. King had earlier travelled to Victoria and removed both the penis and one testicle from the 66-year-old Victorian man. And then this 60-something-year-old man then sought him out again and travelled to Brisbane to have the second testicle removed. And the 26-year-old travelled from New South Wales to Queensland to also have a testicle removed. And these quote-unquote surgeries took place in a motel in Logan and a hostel in Brisbane.
Incredibly amateur procedures were performed, yeah.
Incredibly dangerous procedures. So these two men, they consented to this, they wanted this, and they also consented to being filmed and having the videos uploaded, of the procedures uploaded on the internet.
I don't think I remember any similar case. So both men put in victim impact statements when King was being sentenced, and they both gave very positive reviews about what had happened to them and that they were quite happy with these procedures. So very unusual case on many levels.
I believe the judge read out the victim impact statement from one person who said, quote, "I'm eternally grateful to Ryan for enabling me to enjoy my life," end of quote. So this is very out there.
It's a very interesting moral question, and it comes up in a wide variety of cases. I mean, we've just talked about Brendan Russell in terms of body modification, these odd castration cases, but also in cases of kind of extreme BDSM, where there are kind of willing people willing to do things and people willing to be quote-unquote victims in scenarios that the criminal law sees as being entirely abhorrent and deserving of being criminalized. I'm endlessly fascinated by these types of cases because they really do, you know, talk about a tension between that liberal consenting adults should be able to do whatever they want type ethos and, I guess, broader public policy concerns to do with, you know, are we bordering on self-injury here or self-harm that deserves protection?
And indeed, he pleaded guilty when he came to court. He was given a 3.5-year suspended sentence but released immediately after because he'd already served 355 days in pre-sentence custody.
And that raises an extra interesting component to this in terms of the criminal law, which is if we are saying that consent is not relevant in terms of charging and convicting someone of these injury offences. To what extent should consent be taken into account in mitigation and sentence? So that's one thing that I'm interested in seeing in the Russell case, is to what extent consent is going to come into play at his sentencing and whether or not it should be mitigating on sentence.
Well, that also then brings into question the vulnerability, the actual nature of the consent and how fully informed it is, and whether there are other kind of vulnerabilities at play in terms of that consent being given.
Absolutely. I think that there needs to be a consideration here as well, that in the Brendan Russell case, he was running a business and he was making money from these procedures, I think could distinguish it somewhat from other cases of this kind that we've seen.
Whereas in the Ryan Andrew King case, he had other motivations. They weren't financial, but he wanted to kind of upload them onto the internet and be part of this community. Lawyers for Ryan told the court that he'd had an extremely troubled childhood and lived with ADHD and was on the autism spectrum and had developed obsessions. How does that play into this conversation?
I've looked quite in depth into this, following from the King case, this idea of the kind of eunuch subculture that exists online. And it does seem that King was quite fascinated by that subculture. It's a very poorly understood subculture that overlaps somewhat with another group of people that are sometimes involved in these consensual injury cases, which is people that wish to have limbs removed. So say an arm amputated and things like that. And
a fully functional arm.
A fully functional arm. We've had cases of that come before courts overseas.
Criminal cases where the doctor or the person who's carried out the procedure have been prosecuted.
Yeah, and I think it raises questions of, is this something that we treat as exploitation of vulnerable, incredibly mentally unwell people, or do we treat this as a form of self-expression or identity? And I think there's kind of tension there that, you know, I don't have definitive answers for, but I think that they're really interesting things for the courts to try to grapple with.
Well, in this case, I mean, I think it came to the attention of the police because one of the men needed to go to hospital because of complications arising out of the castration. And then when police arrived at the home, they found the genitals of the other man in the fridge or the freezer. So we're talking about all sorts of very complicated motivations at play here.
I think it's important to note as well in the King case that these castration surgeries, there are some surgeons, qualified surgeons in the United States that offer this type of procedure.
Presumably with some kind of medical counseling.
Under a medical model, yeah. I think that's that question at play here. And I know the ABC's talked a lot about kind of cosmetic surgeries and proper regulatory frameworks around those sorts of things. That would there be demand for these types of extreme backyard castrations if there was an allowance for people to do this medically and in a regulated way in Australia? I think it's another interesting question.
That's a very challenging and confronting conversation, I suppose. I guess we were pointing out that both the physical and the mental well-being of the patients were not being looked after by King when he decided to do this extraordinary backyard castration. And he's putting the people who he carried these procedures out on in gross danger.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
If we can now turn to the UK, where there have been a number of somewhat analogous cases. There was just a year or so ago, a couple of years ago, the case of BM, and that was another case, like the case we started off with, the Brendan Russell case, of a body modification practice where the body modifier was being prosecuted. What was he prosecuted for?
So this was the case of another Brendan. Brendan McCarthy is his name. He also went under the moniker of Dr. Evil in his body modification parlor. He was convicted recently of a number of injury offences related to procedures that were occurring in his parlor. So he would do things like procedures such as tongue splitting, removal of ears, removals of nipples, those sorts of things. things. And he was prosecuted for grievous bodily harm. And in a preliminary hearing, this question was raised of everyone consented to these procedures. Unlike the Brendan Russell case, in the Brendan McCarthy case, none of his clients were complaining of negligence or wrongdoing.
Indeed, years later, one client told the BBC he remains grateful that Brendan McCarthy had removed his nipple.
When I was younger, I had my nipples pierced. I stretched them up, so I had 6 mil thick bars. There was this massive buildup of scar tissue, and it basically just gave me a massive complex about it. I did explain that I'd gone down the correct channels, NHS and a plastic surgeon, to try and get this done, and basically nobody would want to help. So I'm really, really happy with what I've had done. It's definitely made a massive difference to me and improved my quality of life.
So in this preliminary hearing, this question of consent came up, and that was appealed to the Court of Appeal. And we now have this judgment of BM, where the Court of Appeal said, applying the foundational case of Brown, which I think we're going to talk about in a moment, that people could not consent to these sorts of extreme body modification procedures, and consent was not a defence to a charge of grievous bodily harm. So directly analogous to the recent Russell case, in that the Russell case, the court said, no, consent was not relevant here to the grievous bodily harm charge. In BM, the UK courts are saying the same thing.
You referred there to that earlier case of Brown. That's from 1993. That's a House of Lords decision, and it involved consensual sadomasochistic activities between men involving genital torture, branding and bloodletting. And this was, again, consensual activity, but the court found that, quote, society is entitled and bound to protect itself against a culture of violence. Pleasure derived from the infliction of pain is an evil thing, and cruelty is uncivilized.
This is foundational to all of these cases we've been talking about, is this House of Lords decision of Brown, which said that consent to assaults that cause actual bodily harm are irrelevant unless the court thinks that there are good public policy reasons that it should be allowed. Things like boxing and surgery by medical practitioners, sports, those sorts of things. Sadomasochism was found to be not something the House of Lords recognised as an exception. So this House of Lords decision of Brown, that has not only kind of left a huge question mark over BDSM activities.
And what does BDSM stand for again?
Bondage, domination, sadomasochism. Should say not all BDSM activities fall within the ambit of Brown. Brown was dealing with situations where there were potential bruises on the skin and cuts to the skin. So that threshold of actual bodily harm. But it's now being applied in this case and in subsequent cases to body modification. The courts are saying, look, consent is not a defence to these kinds of bodily harms.
We've had the body modification prosecution here in Australia, but do we know, does Brown actually apply here in Australia?
It does. So we know Brown has been adopted as an authority in Australia, at least in the sense of there's a handful of cases that are specifically about someone dying, so manslaughter cases involving BDSM. There's not many, but they all seem to indicate that a common law position in Australia is that you cannot consent to actual bodily harm.
And in those cases you just spoke about, those manslaughter cases, which were, if you like, BDSM sex gone too far and involving the death of a participant. I think one case involved a man who was suffocated by a woman, one involved two men, one involved, I think, sex workers and a client. It's serious issues around, you know, what people can consent to, but we live in a society where there's widespread violence against women in relationships, and we cover this a lot on the Law Report. And I guess while we talk about sexual autonomy and diversity, we need to have a clear-eyed focus on protecting vulnerable people from being injured or killed in relationships, and then allowing a perpetrator to talk about spurious ideas of and self-serving ideas of consent. This is the tension here.
Certainly in the UK, people talk about a kind of quote-unquote rough sex defence and the use of that in cases of domestic homicide. And Brown is often raised and defended from the perspective of, if we were to overturn Brown and say that these sorts of things like strangulation during sex or certain extreme BDSM activities were to occur, we would get more of these quote-unquote rough sex defence type arguments. Sometimes they're raised at a sentencing hearing, but I've had a look in terms of Australian cases, and it's very, very rare for domestic homicide to be defended from the perspective that the victim consented. And in the small instances where that kind of argument has been made, it has not been successful. But I do agree that there does need to be a discussion about how certain defences under the law could be misused if we were to overturn Brown, particularly in relation to BDSM. And I should note that there is a distinction between consensual BDSM and domestic abuse or coercive control.
Coming back to, I guess, body modification, what are the laws around body modification in Australia? Do we have a regulatory framework for this practice?
All states and territories have specific regulations to do with tattooing, piercing, and what's often just called body art. However, it's very unclear whether certain body modification procedures, you know, tongue splitting, certainly the kind of genital surgeries we saw in the Russell case, ear removal, embedding of things underneath the skin, whether or not they actually fall within that regulatory framework. I think particularly following this decision in Russell, it's probably clear to say that the kinds of procedures Russell was undertaking in New South Wales are well and truly criminalised in New South Wales. And because I understand the Victorian law better, I would say also in Victoria. The legal status of body modification in other states and territories is going to be very contingent on how their offences are worded. So, for example, I know South Australia quite explicitly in its injury offences allows victims to consent to those sorts of injuries. So I'd say if there was a jurisdiction where body modification is least likely to be criminalised currently, it'd be South Australia. But of course, it all depends on how each offence is worded in each jurisdiction.
It's also a question of how do we limit harm? I mean, it's what people consent to, but also the danger of the procedure, as well as the way society might regard the outcome or the appearance of what's been done. There's that issue around danger of you know, medical surgical interventions by people who aren't qualified. That's the big picture issue here, isn't it?
I think that question there of if there are these dangerous procedures and there is a thriving subculture of people that are seeking out those procedures, is the best way to tackle that via a prohibition on those procedures or a legalized and regulated approach?
Jared Bartle, a very confronting and challenging and interesting conversation. Look, thank you very much for speaking to the Law Report.
Thanks for having me.
Jared Bartle, lawyer, sessional lecturer in criminal law at RMIT and criminal justice consultant. A big thank you to producer Christina Kukolia and to technical producer Carey Dell. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next time with more law.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.